back to the Best Seat at the Track, everybody, the Front Stretch Podcast. I am your host, as always, Davey Siegel, and we got DGR's Haley Deegan on with us this week to chat about her season to date. A rough rookie year. She admits that. She tells us how she's learned, how she's changed her expectations, her experience running SRX this summer, and so much more. Plus, we have the mullet man turned bearded man, Michael Massey. Say that 5 times fast. To talk some Vegas and preview Talladega and the Xfinity and Truck Series schedules for 2022. Let's get this episode started.
Boogity, boogity, boogity! Let's go racing, boys!
Green flag is out on the podcast this week. Not much to talk about with Las Vegas, Massey. I mean, yes, Denny Hamlin wins the race. Some storylines emerging. Cut line, a little moving and shaking down there. JGR on the rise. Hendrick shooting themselves in the foot a little bit. But overall, poll don't lie. Jeff Gluck's poll, not too great results. And it was kind of just a race.
Okay, I will say, yeah, it wasn't much of a race. And I think we need to start talking about taking Las Vegas out of the playoffs. I don't really think it should have two races, but the tour.
New Hampshire to get its race back?
Nah, we can go somewhere else, somewhere new, you know?
I agree. I'm good for that.
Definitely doesn't deserve two races. But I will say that having it come right after the greatest track on the schedule,
not great.
It was set up to fail. So there's no way Las Vegas was going to look good after Bristol. And it's the same way that when Texas followed Martinsville, you'd have all these storylines building up and then it just zero payoff. And this was the same way. I did think the strategy part was kind of interesting in the second stage, where really all the Hendrick cars just shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty interesting from that aspect, but overall kind of a boring race. I guess Denny had a tire that was starting to go down at the very end.
Yeah.
Chris Lambert talked about that on DBC this week, but yeah, so that made things a little bit interesting with Chase Elliott reeling him in as his car was starting to push. But other than that, there wasn't a whole lot to talk about.
Shameless plug. Also, check out Chris Lambert's conversation with me on Victory Lane. Great conversation there. After you finish listening to the Front Stretch Pod, of course. But yeah, like you said, it wasn't that great of a race. I mean, you're never going to have barn burners every single week. I did not think about that point you made, though, how it was kind of destined to fail. I mean, you can't follow up the best race of the year at Bristol. I mean, even if Vegas was a good race by Vegas standards, right? It still would not have held a candle to what we saw at Bristol. So I'm sure that in a way, Vegas is happy that they have a playoff race, that they have a triple header, et cetera, et cetera. But when they saw the schedule come out, maybe they were smart like you and not dumb like me and said, man, we're going to have to follow Bristol and then Talladega comes after us. Come on, we got sandwiched here.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and you know a perfect way to make it so that nobody has to follow Bristol's amazing act?
Make it the finale, baby.
Yeah.
I'm all aboard. We talked about it last week.
Sure.
I don't know. Do you think it'll ever happen because of ISC holding the finale date? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing to get through, I guess, because I don't know. But they've been so much more flexible in the past couple years.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I don't think it's likely, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Denny Hamlin brought up that point. He's like, there's no way ISC is going to give up that money, which I wouldn't. But also for the sake of the sport, can you imagine a finale at Bristol? Absurd.
Oh, awesome. It would be the second biggest event they ever had there, with the first being the college football game between the Virginia Tech Hokies and Tennessee. We don't need to talk about
I'm currently looking at a Virginia Tech degree on my wall here. Because I told you my girlfriend went there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you told me that.
Yeah. Go Hokies. Whenever I answer the phone at Sirius and Jeb Burton calls in, I always tell him, go Hokies. And he always gets jacked up for the interview. And then when I answer, I'm like, all right, see ya, go Hokies. He's like, yeah, we're going to play good this weekend. He loves the Hokies.
I got to see that because I'm struggling to picture Jeb Burton jacked up, you know?
It's hard.
Such an even-keel guy.
I know. All right, let's get back on track here. Let's talk a little bit more about the Hendrick cars. I was kind of watching in disbelief at how they, like you said, shot themselves in the foot. Cliff Daniels, for all the success that he has had this year, I mean, he is an unbelievable crew chief. He took one on the chin, and he said that it was completely his fault. He messed up the strategy. right? He kept Larson out a little bit longer than expected because of a chase truck breaking down. Circumstances, yes, out of his control. But also, Larson, which seemed to be the fastest car at some points in the race on Sunday, ended up getting mired back in the dirty air, in the traffic, couldn't make up ground as he was going to be able to if he was a little bit more up towards the front. And he wasn't the only one either. Chase Elliott unlapped himself under green, so he was able to get back on strategy. But William Byron had a couple pit road miscues. Alex Bowman was with that strategy and then had a loose wheel late. So Hendrick Motorsports, even though they were running 1, 2, 3, 4 at one point in the evening, only one of the cars finished inside the top five, and the other three, they had some weird nights overall, from the back to the front to the back again, and then finished somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, and you know, as you point out, Elliott recovered from it. Larson is so far, he has so many playoff points that
he ain't got to worry.
Really hurt him. But Byron and Bowman, that could have killed their playoffs right there. Just think, one pit call could have destroyed their entire championship hopes. And maybe they bounce back. One of them wins Talladega or wins at the Roval. Bowman's pretty good at the Roval. Byron's pretty good at, super speedways. But I don't know. And I guess Byron did overcome a pretty big point obstacle in the first round. So it wouldn't be super surprising to see him come back in. But man, they just dug themselves into a hole just right away with some of the fastest cars, as you pointed out.
Yeah. Byron came from the back to the front on the initial start, made himself into the top 10, I think, before the comp yellow. Then he took the lead at one point. Then he had a myriad of issues. He had a slow pit stop. Then he had a flat tire late. I mean, for as fast as he was and for the strategy that did not work out in their favor, he also had a lot of bad luck, which I feel like has been a trend this year. And a lot of Byron fans on Twitter were clamoring that the pit crew has been awful and they've been terrible and, you know, they're losing races for him. So it just furthermore exemplifies the point that in order to win a championship or even have a shot to win a championship and advance through these rounds and have your three race seasons at a time and do the best job that you can in those specific rounds, you can be good as a driver, but if you don't have great calls, if you don't have great pit stops, if you don't have a little bit of a luck, it's not going to work out for you. And right now, Byron, they seem to have speed. They seem to have a good driver, but everything else right now seems to be lacking.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know that you can throw his pit crew under the bus like that because they've reeled off some really fast stops for him at critical points.
Yeah.
At certain times of the year. I mean, just think of the cutoff race at Bristol. I mean, he finished third that race. He was rolling in that race. So that means they were giving him some fast stops.
Yeah.
They weren't setting him back there. But also you got to take into consideration this crew. So it's been loose wheels, things like that. You don't really have to deal with that next year. So just the one lug nut.
Think, yeah.
I mean, if there's a loose lug nut next year, it's going to be the Joey Gase wreck pretty much.
Yeah.
Just sailing off with three tires into the wall.
That would not be good.
Which glad Joey Gase is okay.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
The most important thing, but yeah. I don't think you can throw any one person under the bus. Just sometimes bad luck is bad luck. That's the case for Byron.
Was this race lacking anything in particular? I mean, besides the obvious things of like, you know, we want more 750 races. We don't want as many 550 races. That's what, you know, typical people will say. And I'm not a 550 or 750 truther. I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Besides cautions, which would obviously force some restarts, bunch things up, and make things more intriguing. Like, was there any one specific thing that you think was lacking in terms of the product, or is it kind of just a confluence of events that we unfortunately have seen more times than not at mile and a halfs?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I think that as in the Xfinity race as well, as the track got darker and as it cooled down, there weren't as many incidents. Which in Cup there's only one incident.
That's
so,
yeah, exactly.
It's a given that as the race
like
went
you
on,
you can't count on a yellow to get a lucky dog or to bunch the field back up. You can't do it.
But even the Xfinity racing, which I think, you know, a lot of others think that that's the best car in NASCAR right now.
Well. Yep.
And they had a lot of wrecks, including a big one of their own. Mm-hmm. But as that night went on, we saw a long green flag run to end the race with Josh Berry, you know, doing green flag pit stops, losing the lead, coming back and taking it back.
And the sun went down and the track changed as well, to your point.
Exactly. Exactly. So I, as much as it would suck, run this thing in the heat of the day in Vegas, or at least start it a couple hours earlier, like 2 hours earlier. And I don't know. It'd be hot for sure, but
yeah,
maybe the racing would be better.
That has to do with the scheduling too, because you know they have their first race, you know, right after Daytona and the West Coast Swing. That's because it's in February or early March when the weather's not terrible. And even though it's, you know, late September, it's still hot. So if you're gonna do that, you probably would have to either have another race at the beginning of the season, which is unrealistic, or you would have to have it even later on in the year, like maybe in the round of eight. And we just saw that this race, this track probably doesn't deserve a round of eight date. Here's an idea. How about a weekend doubleheader? Knock two out in one weekend. We should do that more. I wish we did.
Well, I think the big draw there is the casinos and stuff, and
they
want people there for two weekends, but it's a good idea. Just it's like the Bristol Championship race. There's some obstacles to overcome to get there. I think another thing as well, I saw Nick Bromberg talk about it, which polarizing figure. I know some people love him, some people hate him, but he said that, you know, this is a package designed for sprints. Okay. If you look at that race, the first couple laps after restart, they're phenomenal, but NASCAR races are marathons. So, I mean, it's like you're asking Usain Bolt to go out there and run 500 miles instead of doing his little 8 second sprint or whatever it is. After a while, it just becomes spread out and you can't pass anybody. So I don't know. We need a package. Hopefully the next gen car is, but it's better for marathons, not sprints.
Massey, stick around. We're going to get a quick stage break out the way, and then we're going to talk to Haley Deegan. What do you say? You up for that?
Yes, sir. Great to have her on this week.
This week's stage break is unsponsored. But good news, if you would like to sponsor us, we are wide open for advertising here on the Front Stretch Podcast. All you got to do is send an email to sales@frontstretch.com, S-A-L-E-S. @frontstretch.com. We will get you hooked up, make it worth your while. If you'd like to sponsor the pod, if you'd like to sponsor some video content, if you'd like to sponsor an article, if you'd like to sponsor a specific series, whatever you want. If you want to sponsor Massey's beard, if you want to sponsor this big ass fan behind him, who is his number one fan, if you want to sponsor this mug that he's drinking out of as I'm doing this ad read, we can hook you up and make it worth your while. sales@frontstretch.com. Hit us up. Let's throw it over to our chat with Haley Deegan, driver of the number one Ford F-150 for David Gilliland Racing in the Camping World Truck Series. Talked about a lot of different things with Haley, reevaluating expectations that she had coming into the year, being her rookie season, adjusting to learning on the fly, no practice, no qualifying. That's been really tough for her to adjust to. Stick around for what she thinks is the biggest change and the biggest learning curve that she did not really expect going into the year that has to do with her short track background and not really having experience on bigger tracks. Plus, her SRX experience this past summer with Tony Stewart and Ray Evernham. What did NASCAR think about that? Because NASCAR, not necessarily the biggest fans of that series. Haley, obviously a big name in NASCAR, one of the biggest stars, and a big marketing push has been going on by NASCAR for a handful of years now. So how did they feel about one of their biggest stars competing in just that, a competitor? The answer to that and much more in my conversation with Haley Deegan right here on the pod. Pleasure to welcome on to the show this week a good old friend, and it's been entirely too long. Haley Deegan, driver of the Ford truck for DGR in the Camping World Truck Series, live from Las Vegas. And we were just chatting, instead of losing money going out in Vegas, you decided to watch other people lose their money in Vegas. I think that's the correct way to do things, honestly.
Oh, yeah. It's the most efficient way for my bank account. Just sit there, watch people lose money. And you're like, it's not me losing money. And I still get to react with it. So it's funny.
Did Chase bet anything, or is he too smart to do that?
No, he's too smart to do that.
That's what I figured. That's Chase, why we like him around
here. Chase is a money saver, too. And I talked to him about that. I was like, maybe we're just over-efficient with our money, which I do feel like we are. Like, sometimes we're like, oh, let's not go out to dinner expensive. And then we're like, we can like occasionally go out to dinner and just like that. And we don't have to go to Longhorn when we want to go eat out nice one time, but yeah. It's just like, I feel like we're more efficient with our money than that.
You guys probably spend most of your money on sushi and toys for Rambo. Do I have that right? I feel like those are the two main things.
No. It's medication for Rambo. Man, he goes through some medication. Just take it 7 times a day.
How's he doing now, by the way?
He's good. They put him on a new medication. He's gone about a month without a seizure. So now he's on 3 medications, 7 times a day. And this new one, however, it's like, so you have to make, like, they said, like, the right cocktail of medicines that work for your dog.
You're like a
and
bartender.
I guess I have a very hard case with my dog. Just it's hard finding the right combination. Yeah. But I think we found it. I'm praying to God that we did. If not, we're just going to have to keep trying new stuff.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads me into my next question, actually, because like I mentioned, it's been a while since we got to catch up fully. I mean, we saw each other on the grid at the Glen, but you were right before the race. We didn't get to chat fully. So I know that this year overall, right, it's been up and down personally, professionally. So just checking in on you as a friend, first and foremost, like, how are you doing? You've gone through a lot. You really have. So how are you doing?
Story of my life. It's always, always. And I feel like with racing, it's going really good right now. I feel like we're making a lot of improvements. I'm just excited. I feel like we've done a lot of things this year and I feel like we've accomplished so much. We've had our ups and downs and I feel like we're on this road of just getting better and progressing and just chipping away at it. Mm-hmm. Social media has been fun. I love it. I truly love it. YouTube channel keeps me busy, but racing's obviously the first priority. Yeah. And then everything else is second to that.
You paying Chase enough? Because he's working hard.
He does work hard. I know. Everyone's like, do you pay Chase enough? I'm like, dude, we're dating. It's like, that's what he does.
Yeah. So, it's been cool to see him, though, kind of like embrace this new videographer role. Because he's always been passionate about that, but now he's like deep into it. It's cool.
Yeah, he's very, very, very talented at it. Very talented. Like, I didn't even know back when we first started dating how talented he was. He'd talk about it, but I was like, hey, yeah. And then all of a sudden to see him actually edit my videos together, I was like, wow, you are truly talented at this. And so I actually hired on another filmer because it was getting to the point, because you figure when you do 3 videos a week, that's 1 day filming and it takes them a day to edit. Mm-hmm. So right there is 6 days. Well, when we have to go travel, which we are every single week, that takes up more days. And so it was getting to the point where he'd be literally, we'd film that day and he would edit through the night.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is getting to be a little too much when you have sleeping for 2 hours. And so I hired someone else on just to kind of help out. And so you would be able to sleep at night and not have to work 24/7. So it's been better.
How do you feel that I'm coming for your TikTok fame?
Oh, you are? Really? How many followers we at now?
All right. I'm not coming for you that hard. Relax, okay? You got it covered over there. I know you do. But honestly, though, like social media, it's always been a big thing for you. I mean, knowing you how long I have back to the K&N days and to see your growth, it's been exponential on many different levels. And I think that I don't remember what outlet put it out, but it was a few years ago out of all 3 national series, this is even before you were in trucks, you have the most social media value. So this is something that you put a lot of effort to. It's not just flippant. Like, you actually put a lot of effort into it. And clearly, it's paying off because you're getting sponsorship from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been crazy. And I've had a few more articles come out, like, saying, like, my sponsorship value is, like, up there with Serena Williams in the top 3 of all female in sports. And it's crazy to see that, because obviously social media takes a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of hours. And I feel like I devote a lot of hours to that, and to see it pay off, it helps me a lot to kind of keep me motivated to keep doing it, because it is a full-time job, but it's a job that I truly love.
Are you still sliding in sponsors' DMs?
I still do that. Still to this
day. You got to.
People are like, hey, so when are you guys releasing this? They're gonna send you one. I'm like, yeah.
You're doing that like 3 years ago. Grind doesn't stop.
I guess you might not know this. Most people don't, but there's a maximum amount of DMs you can send in a day.
No, I do. You told me last time you maxed out.
you can max out your daily DMs. So yeah. I would have a thing that I would copy and paste, and I'd change like the name of their company and every single one. And I'd send them out to like, so I could kind of get in talks with them, because the marketing people who cover social media aren't the people who deal with the money. But if you go through that department, you can get to the other people. Yeah. And so it's like making an introduction, kind of telling them about you, which it has worked for me a lot. And I like it. It's a cool way to connect with people. And even like if I want to collaborate with someone on YouTube, just being able to go on Instagram and message them and have them respond, it's crazy how fast you can connect with people.
Yeah. Have you made the mistake that I have when I'm like networking with people and I copy and paste the same thing, but I forget to change the name? And instead of saying like, oh, hey, Haley, I say, hey, Chase. And it's like, oh, God. And I already click send. Oh, and it's a nightmare.
You can unsend. No, you can unsend. Yeah. You know, you can unsend DMs.
Well, I can't do it. I'm doing this over email, so I can't unsend an email. So that's a nightmare.
You messed up.
Yeah, I did. All right. We should talk a little bit of racing, I suppose. Let's talk about Bristol, because that wreck was rough. Like, and you said it afterwards, the footage that Chase got of it. I saw that you were pretty sore afterwards, and I know that you love going to the gym. I feel like going to the gym that week had to be pretty rough considering how big that crash was.
I just worked out for the first time yesterday after that, because I was like,
you gotta rest.
I could barely, like, it just, I was sore. And then one of the things that threw me off, which right after the wreck, when I got on my truck, my eye socket hurt really bad, but it wasn't bruised or anything. And I was like, ah, it's no big deal. And I was just sore after, like, nothing major at all. I had some bruises on my legs, but not bad. And then the next day, I woke up the next morning, I'm like, I think my eye's swelling up. And it just, like, throughout the day, kept getting more swollen. And I was like, oh, God. Yeah, but it didn't really bruise, but it just hurt around. But it's gone now, so I'm good.
Damn. Was that the worst wreck you've been in, probably?
Probably the worst feeling ones. It might have not. It did look pretty bad.
Yeah.
But that definitely, I've been very fortunate in my career, like, knock on wood, that I haven't had that many major wrecks.
Your brother and your dad can't say the same.
No. My little brother, Hayden, he's here at the racetrack right now. But I remember back, he was 11 years old. He hit a false neutral over a jump, fractured his back, broke his collarbone and, like, his arm. And I remember, like, he's just laying there, just, like, limp and like nothing he can do. I'm like, you know, when people are in pain, and like, even I remember Daytona when I did the IMSA race, I get a FaceTime call. I'm on the grid about to do intros, and I get a FaceTime call from Hayden. Hayden doesn't call me unless it's urgent, especially when he knows, like, my dad's with me, and he's like, hey, dad's not answering his phone, can you put him on the phone? I'm like, oh, I'm not with him, what's wrong? He's like, I think I broke my arm. And he, like, shows me his arm's fully kinked.
Oh my God.
I'll go to dad real quick.
Oh God, just another life in the A day in the life of the Deegans. It's you guys are one of a kind, surely.
Always.
You really are. All right, on a bit of a serious note, though, I know that this has not really been the season that you wanted. I know you hold yourself to a really high standard, and this has not been up to your expectations. I know that. So how have you dealt with that? Have you had to change your expectations throughout the year? Has your confidence fluctuated? What's this season been like for you to deal with?
I think I made some really realistic expectations at the beginning of the year because I didn't want to get disappointed or down on myself that I wasn't doing as good. And I think that obviously it was very tough at the beginning of the season. I feel like when you're kind of in this certain pack in the truck series, it's tough to get out of that. And it's tough to avoid a lot of the wrecks that do happen. But I feel like we've been getting a lot better throughout the year. And I feel like we've made some really good improvements, whether it was finishing seventh at Gateway. And I felt like that was my best race for me performing as a person. And I feel like kind of where my strong suit is kind of mile and a half. So it's where I feel comfortable. Obviously, I love Kansas and those type tracks, Charlotte. And so I'm excited for something like, for me to get back and race on those tracks in the future.
What's been the most challenging part of this year that maybe you didn't expect? I know that not having practice and qualifying has obviously been really tough, and I'll ask about that in a minute, but overall, something that maybe you didn't expect to be dealing with that's really, really tough.
I'd say something that's tough is dealing with the air. Learning how to maneuver air is very difficult when you can't see it. So that's something that I feel like kind of goes untalked about on the fan side and unacknowledged, because it's not something that you can simply break down.
Yeah.
And it's something you truly have to feel and experience to learn. And I feel like that's something that I acknowledged at the beginning of the year, that I knew it was going to be a challenge, but I didn't think it'd be this challenging and how much it affects your truck. So that's something that I've had to kind of try to wrap my head around and get better at, and I'm still dealing with the every single race trying to learn new things.
Well, it's interesting you point that out too, because obviously racing on the K&N level and then moving up to ARCA, there's some bigger tracks, but for the most part you've grown up on short tracks with bull rings, and air doesn't matter there. So it's no surprise that obviously you're kind of dealing with this on a grander scale, a national scale, for the first time, so you're kind of learning on the fly.
Exactly. I'm learning as I go. Every single race, I learn something new and I get a little bit more comfortable. And we've just been having to chip away at the block and trying to get better because it's tough. Not going out there with practice, it's really tough. And it's really tough to figure out how your truck's handling. Is it just the dirty air you're in, or is your truck actually handling this way? So it's just something tough to kind of wrap my head around and deal with and figure out on my terms.
I don't know if you can really quantify it, because everybody that I talk to that has been in your position, it's really tough to articulate, but can you describe how detrimental not having practice or qualifying has been to you this year? Because, you know, there's other people in the series that, yes, they're young, but they've had a couple years of practice and qualifying. I mean, for example, right, you know, if you have practice at, let's say, Vegas, you know, you'll have 100 laps to get used to that track, and instead of having 100 laps of practice, you're going cold turkey, green flags out, you're too wide, you're going for all you can. So it's really tough to adjust to.
I forget what race it was, but I remember we were in a brand new truck. I have no clue how the truck's going to handle. You kind of have your expected of what you think it's going to handle, but you don't always know. And so going out there, turn one, it's like, oh, just go in here, almost wide open. You got your four wide with Kyle Busch hanging on your right rear quarter panel. Like, that stuff's tough. It's, oh, just going to turn one wide open, four wide with Kyle Busch hanging on your right
rear. And it's your first time at these tracks, too.
First time at these tracks. And it's tough, very, very tough to kind of just go out there and do. It's just like, it's tough to kind of just make yourself do those things. And so I think that's something I'm going to have to learn over time. And I've gotten a lot better at it, but I still feel like we have a lot more to go. Yeah.
Nothing's been officially announced, but next year the assumption is that practice and qualifying will come back in some capacity. So I'm sure that you're very antsy for that to come, right?
Oh, yeah. I hope so. I really, really hope so, because I feel like that's been kind of a big section of my development and experience that has been taken out. And I feel like I valued that. I really needed that. And I feel like having that even next year, even with the experience I have on these tracks, is still going to help a lot.
Feels like years ago at this point, because the year just keeps going on, but you did SRX this summer, and that looks so, so fun. You had a blast. The whole series was so much fun. How did that opportunity come about for you specifically? Did Tony or Ray or somebody else reach out?
I got a phone call from Ray. I don't even know where he got my number from, but I got a phone call from him.
Don't question it.
And originally, I didn't have his number, and so he sent me a text after. They didn't answer the phone call, because I get like a lot of those like spam calls, like your car's extended warranty. And so I didn't answer, and I got a text from him. I ended up calling him back with my manager. We went over all the details, and next thing you know, I was racing that race in Knoxville.
That's crazy. So it all happened in what, like less than a week, it seems like?
I'd say more like a couple weeks.
Okay.
Probably like 3-4 weeks.
Yeah. So a lot of people from the outside looking in, and you know, NASCAR, they not necessarily were the biggest fans of SRX, right? You obviously are a NASCAR driver first and foremost. So I'm curious if NASCAR had any reaction to you, one of the biggest names in the sport, competing in that series. Did they have anything to say about that?
I would say it would be a bigger deal if I was a Cup Series level driver. Obviously, I'm the Truck Series. They know the position I'm in with no practice and just trying to gain experience. And it's expensive to get seat time in other forms of racing. So I think just being able to go out there and go race and gain more experience, they understood.
Yeah, and there's no testing, and you got to race on dirt. So that was prep for Knoxville.
Oh, it was nice. It was nice to go race on the dirt. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Dirt princess, as you love to be called.
No, don't call me. We never cut that name.
Do people still call you that? Because I know that you hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Really? You think they'd learn by now?
I know. Sadly, I wish. I wish it'd just go away. But I guess it's not anytime soon. As long as
people got to do their research, man. Come on. Would you want to do SRX next year if they came to you and they were like, "Hey, you want to do this full time with us? If it doesn't conflict with the truck stuff, would you want to do that again?"
If it didn't conflict with trucks, I would be all for it. Just gaining more experience and more seat time and be able to race more, I'm all about that, especially if it's a lot more cost effective. And so I think being able to go out there and go get seat time, like, I'm all about that, as long as it doesn't conflict with the priority of my truck racing.
Only a handful of races left this year for the Truck Series schedule. What are your goals? What do you hope to accomplish? What are you hoping to learn before the season ends?
I think top 10s, just kind of knocking out those top 10s, really running with that front group and kind of learning what they do and kind of their tricks and techniques of how they race, those guys with experience. And so just gaining as much information as I can at the end of the season, just be able to learn during the off season with.
I know that you're an aggressive driver. I've seen you do aggressive things on the racetrack, but yeah, I know, right? Crazy. But you got to balance being aggressive and being respectful, especially in the truck series where there's so much take and not a lot of give. A lot of young, aggressive drivers and a lot of veterans that not necessarily are very aggressive, but they've kind of had to change their driving style because the series has been invaded by young guns like you. So how do you balance being aggressive but also being respectful and trying to gain the respect of your competitors?
That's something that I've really focused on this year, is being a respectful racer, earning respect and trying to show people that I belong here. And that's something that I feel like I've done a lot better of. I have been a little bit too much on the cautious side up until this point, but I've been getting better about being more cautiously aggressive, not doing things that are just stupid, but doing things that actually are effective, even if it's a little more aggressive.
That's how I tell my girlfriend how I drive on the road. I drive cautiously aggressive.
Cautiously
she doesn't
aggressive,
believe me.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll have her listen to this and she can be like, okay, it's true.
It's true.
Your relationship with your spotter, that's a big one, obviously. I listen to you and TJ talk over the radio a lot during the races. He's coaching you. You can't hear it, but on channel 2, he's communicating with the crew chief saying, this looked better. What do you think? What do the lap times say? What does the SMT say? Your relationship with TJ's got to be strong, because knowing how experienced he is in the sport, he's been around the block a time or two. He knows a lot of things that are just second knowledge to him. But for you, you may be hearing about them or learning about them for the first time. So working with him has to have been pretty well.
Oh, yeah, it's been great. TJ's been awesome to work with. He gives me so much information. I feel like people sometimes will go and say like, oh, he talks too much. But that's what I want. That's what I told them at the beginning of the season is, hey, when you don't talk on the radio, I'm going to key up and say, are you still there? Because I am paranoid that it unclips. And I still do that to this day, even if we're riding around under caution. And say there's like silence for a straightaway. I'm like, you still there? Still there? I just want to make sure.
Talk to me.
Yeah, he does a very good job, and he's figured out me and what I want out of a spotter. And so he honestly kills it and does amazing.
Mm-hmm. How about your relationship with your crew chief? Obviously, for obvious reasons, right? That has to be one of the strongest relationships that you have within the team.
Yeah, me and Mike are super close together. And I feel like he understands, as a young driver, he's worked with a lot of young drivers, how to kind of develop them and how to work with them and teach them. And he's done a great job. So I'm super happy to be working with him. But unfortunately, I have to go now. I have another appearance for Ford, and so can't miss those.
All right, I'll let you go real quick. I know you tweeted the other day, I think it was yesterday, when Ford unveiled the truck nose, that you can't wait to be in it next year. So I know nothing official, but do you expect to be back next year in the truck series?
That's my hopes. We still have a lot of things to wrap up and finish and get done with sponsors. So honestly, it just depends, making sure all the sponsor money comes in and we can meet our goal and go truck racing again.
Haley, it's been great catching up with you. Go to that Ford appearance and best of luck tonight in Vegas.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
White Flag is out on the Front Stretch podcast. Big thank you to Haley Deegan for giving us some time on the eve of her race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, which she said after the race on Twitter was one of her best races up until things went awry, which unfortunately has seemed to happen more times than not for her this season. So big thank you to Haley, and big thank you to Lauren Emling as well at DGR over there for helping coordinate the conversation. Always great to catch up with an old friend, and appreciate her time. Massey, just real quick before we get into Talladega, what do you think of Haley and her season so far? Obviously, one of the most hyped prospects in terms of off-track appeal and on-track talent in a long, long time for obvious reasons, just hasn't seemed to really come together for her so far this year.
Yeah, so the first half of the year was a struggle for sure, and she just didn't seem all that competitive. I think something that really helped her confidence was running an SRX, and she had that second place run. Since then, I think she's been a little faster, a little more competitive. She had her first top 10 a month or so back. I thought she was running decent the past 2 weeks, but that's where horrible luck kicked in. She was like William Byron the past 2 weeks, except much worse, because those were violent wrecks.
Yeah, and she talked about that too. Bit worst wreck of her NASCAR career.
Yeah, I imagine that is the – it doesn't get much worse. Hopefully she never experiences anything worse than that. Nice. But – yeah, and it'll be good to see how she can do once this season's over with. She has a full year of a NASCAR National Touring Series under her belt, and how she can get back to going next year. And if she starts making some Xfinity starts next year, how she does in those cars. She could be like a Harrison Burton, where he didn't do that great in trucks, got to Xfinity, won some races.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how different cars fit different drivers' driving styles, and who knows, maybe Haley will be one of those type of drivers. So again, thank you to Haley. Thank you to Lauren for helping coordinate the conversation. Great to catch up with her. And she will be competing this weekend at Talladega. Hopefully she doesn't go too hard on the Boulevard because she's got a race to run. Unpredictability, chaos, craziness, any and every adjective to describe Talladega. You have probably heard it by now. This Sunday, the Yellowwood 500. By the way, what's Yellowwood? I don't know what Yellowwood is.
I have no idea.
While I look up what Yellowwood is, why don't you tell us how you feel about Talladega being in this round and where it's positioned? Because I like that it's not a cutoff race. That's just me. But I do like that it is in the playoffs and it does hold significance. I'm going to look up Yellowwood now.
Yeah, we saw too much funny business when it was the cutoff race, Kevin Harvick.
But, 2015.
I love having a super speedway in the playoffs because it's just that thing that just mixes everything up.
You need variety. You need one.
Exactly. And you need a playoffs that's representative of the whole schedule, right?
Exactly.
There's three.
You need short tracks. You need road courses. You need intermediates. You need super speedways. You need all these things, Massey. We're on the same page.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So there should be a super speedway. Now, two super speedways in the playoffs?
No, thanks.
Now you're going crazy. But yeah, one is good for sure. Did you notice on Front Stretch this week, the boss man Tom Bowles pointed out that Talladega's craziness it's kind of like the Olympics. It pops up every 4 years for a random crazy winner, right? Mm. So 2005, Dale Jarrett hadn't won in a while, gets his last win. 2009, Brad Keselowski, crazy finish with Carl Edwards, where he burst onto the scene.
Yep.
2013, Front Row Motorsports, the 1-2, David Reagan, David Gilliland, their first win as an organization. And then 2017 was Stenhouse, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. went in his first race.
Interesting.
So
weird things come in fours.
What's 4 years after 2017?
2021.
We're right here.
Anthony Alfredo to victory lane.
There you go. In the spring race, we saw Brad Keselowski win it. That's nothing new, nothing surprising at Talladega.
Blaney's won it in the past.
Yeah, I think we're due for a crazy winner. All right. Just an insane.
Okay. I was going to say somebody that comes to mind for me is Bubba Wallace because he's been good on I was going to say plate tracks, put a dollar in the swear jar, on tapered spacer track super speedways. He wouldn't be a crazy winner. He'd obviously be a big winner and a first-time winner at that. Corey LaJoie had a ton of speed at Daytona in the regular season cutoff, but you're thinking maybe crazier than that?
I'll tell you a crazy winner.
Oh,
Justin Allgaier in a Spire car this week.
I can see that.
Yeah, we saw how good Corey ran at Daytona, like you were saying. He might just come out there. Everybody wrecks. He drives a smart race, as we know him to do, ends up stealing it.
So I could see Justin Haley doing it again, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And he's good.
He doesn't get enough respect. Like, people know that he's a great super speedway racer, but they're like, yeah, he's in the Xfinity Series. His cup win was rain short, and it wasn't legit, which is correct. It wasn't legit, but a win is a win. But even in the Cup Series, Colic Racing, no slouch. Kaz Grahl has gotten a top five, out of super speedway before. Allmendinger obviously won a race earlier this year for them. And Justin Haley, I'd go so much to say that even in the Cup Series, he's a top 10 super speedway racer. I said it.
Hey, I don't disagree. And you know what? If I'm Justin Haley, I want people to keep me under the radar, okay? Because the next year when I'm full-time in Cup, there's four chances. Bam, he might just win all four of them. You don't know. But, he's definitely a good sleeper pick. All those guys we mentioned.
By the way, I looked up Yellowwood. It is pressure-treated pine, and it's pressure-treated lumber. So it's like they can take different forms of wood, pressure-treat it, put specific like coats on it, and then sell it to you. So if you're building a deck or something, hit up Yellowwood, I guess. You building a deck or anything?
I'm not building anything right now, but
I'll
keep it in mind.
Makes you look like a lumberjack.
yeah, but I don't know too much about wood, especially the yellow variety.
We're getting off the rails here. I think we're going to say something inappropriate. Let's move on. Let's talk about Ford versus Chevy versus Toyota. Strength in numbers, that's kind of become the name of the game recently. Kyle Busch said so much. I heard him on an MRN program this week basically saying, Toyota kind of started the strength in numbers game 1 year, even though they had the least amount of cars. And then Ford and Toyota, Chevrolet, kind of latched onto that, and they have kind of taken that to another level. So who has the upper hand this week? Is it Ford? Is it Chevrolet? Is it Toyota? Because they got Denny Hamlin, who has nothing to lose, and he clearly is the favorite for a reason. And now he's going to be able to help out his Toyota teammates, three of which are in the playoffs trying to advance. Do you think one OEM has an upper hand over the other?
Yeah, I think the way the season's going, I'd say Ford has the advantage. They've won all three so far, with McDowell winning the 500, Keselowski winning Talladega, and Blaney winning this most recent race at Daytona. But Denny is a very powerful asset for Toyota, as you mentioned. And I have to wonder if Bubba Wallace is up there late, and you're talking about him, and Denny is behind him, will Denny go for the win? I don't know. He doesn't have to win it necessarily.
Here's a good what if. Do you think he would pass Bubba for the win? Let me rephrase. If Bubba's in front of him versus if, let's say, Christopher Bell is in front of him, who would he be more reluctant to pass for the win?
I would say Bubba, because
I agree with that. I think there's a lot riding on 2311 for him financially. So
yeah, exactly. And I mean, we saw that with Dale Earnhardt back in the day. It didn't end the way he wanted it to, but that his
he was content
last
to push
race,
him.
That last race, he wanted to finish third, pretty much. Yeah. He was gonna
That's
block.
The only time he's ever been content finishing third.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, Denny could be, given a Dale like performance and given pushing Bubba to the win. And whereas
Did you just say Denny and Dale in the same sentence when talking about Talladega? Oh no, Earnhardt Nation's gonna come for you.
Well, I don't know.
You're stuck now.
I have no way out of this. But Denny is
for the record.
I
agree with you.
Hey, Denny has two more Daytona 500 wins than Dale Earnhardt. There, I said it.
Say it with your chest. Denny's on the Mount Rushmore of super speedway racers, definitely.
For sure. And that doesn't mean he's as great as Dale. In every other way, but
yeah, walk it back.
Yeah, one aspect, they're pretty equal.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some schedule stuff, because I know Talladega, it comes with a lot of different things, but there's not a whole lot to preview because of the unpredictability and the chaos that ensues there. Let's talk Xfinity and truck schedules. The day that we're recording this, they were announced officially. I know The Athletic and Jordan Bianchi reported that Portland is going to be on the Xfinity schedule. That was confirmed. And the thing that I'm excited about, I think you are as well, IRP, Lucas Oil Raceway, back on the NASCAR National Series schedule. The truck series is going to go to IRP, going to Mid-Ohio, going out west to Sonoma. There are some big, big changes for the Xfinity and the truck series. Does anything specifically stand out to you?
Yeah, I am pretty happy with that truck schedule. So Vegas loses a truck date, which, as we were talking about, should probably only have one date anyways. And we get IRP, which is awesome. I just wish that Xfinity had it as well.
Well, I was going to ask Ben Kennedy the question that is, are they going to use the truck race as a test session to see if infrastructure-wise, racing product-wise, interest-wise, it could work for Xfinity or Cup? I think the answer is yes. I hope the answer is yes, because that'd be awesome.
Yeah, for sure. I hope it's a test for Cup. Why don't we just do like a Wednesday night IRP Cup race and do the Indy road course? Yeah.
I say yes. You got to get Fox and NBC to agree. I'm all for it. More short track. You have one right there.
Yeah.
In just a huge market.
Put that race on Peacock or something, and then it won't matter
fine.
Much about the rating.
I'm down.
So I don't know. That way you shorten the season a little bit. That's a whole nother topic.
You're excited about IRP, though. Sorry.
I am very excited about IRP. I wish that we could have seen a few more of those get on the schedule. I was hoping, I knew it wasn't probably going to happen, but I was hoping that to make it up to Pocono, that we would see South Boston get on the truck schedule, since Pocono lost their cup date.
You can dream.
Since they're owned by the same company for people.
Pocono did become the regular season finale for trucks.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Also, Canadian Tire is not on the schedule for logistical concerns and reasons, and Watkins Glen is now also off of the truck schedule. So Pocono's the regular season finale. That's some consolation. I know it probably doesn't float their boat, but it's something.
Yeah, and well, you get Mid-Ohio for trucks, but you lose it for Xfinity.
Right, because they go to Portland.
Yeah, yeah, which is kind of sad. I always enjoy the Xfinity races there, but we'll see what the trucks can do.
Yeah, I'm glad there's still a presence there at Mid-Ohio because, I mean, even though there's a lot of tracks in the Midwest, I think the road course itself at Mid-Ohio is top-notch, and the racing that's put on there is really good. So I'm excited to see some truckers go there because we know that they like to be aggressive and no holds barred, and there's not a lot of runoff room at Mid-Ohio. So if you make a mistake, it's not going to end well for you. So I'm excited to see how that pans out. Hopefully not too many yellows, but some aggressiveness is never hurt anybody.
Yeah, let's get a truck race in the rain there. How about it?
I don't know about that.
They're not that great, huh?
Yeah. Also, trucks are going back to Knoxville, so hopefully the track prep will be a little bit better, and they'll figure that out.
Yeah, they need to because they didn't do a good job preparing it this past time, and it wasn't that great of a race.
I don't blame the track. I mean, big, heavy trucks, they're hard to prep for. They're not sprint cars, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's trial and error type of thing. Just go to Eldora.
I know. I would like to see them try to do like a halfway break or something for Knoxville, though, so that they can have time to actually go water the track down and do what they need to do.
I'm down for that.
So that way we don't have a great first stage and then everything else is just blah.
Yeah. Real quick, let's talk about Portland. First time back to the Pacific Northwest in over 2 decades for NASCAR. It's big for multiple reasons. Another road course, a new road course on the Xfinity Series schedule, back to the Pacific Northwest, and a market in an area that NASCAR has been trying to get back into for a handful of years. I'm not necessarily sold on the venue itself, considering what we saw, the calamity in Turn 1 for the ARCA West race and the IndyCar race, but I'm all for new things, so why not? I'm excited about Portland.
Yeah, let's try it. And it's one of those deals. I've been curious if there is a crowd for NASCAR up there, you know? So we'll see attendance-wise if the place packs out, like Road America. I didn't expect Road America to have this huge attendance for its first cup race there. And I'm expecting even less for Portland. So
I think there may be some people, though, that the novelty of it will draw them in. Yeah. So they may not necessarily be NASCAR fans, but if you're in the Portland area, or even if you're in Seattle and you're like, hey, why not? I mean, let's try it. Let's take a road trip 4 hours down south. There may be some of those people and those fans that aren't necessarily diehards and that have been waiting for 20 years, but they have a free weekend and they're like, yeah, why not? Let's try it out. It could be a mix.
Yeah. Just tell the hipsters in Portland that it's not the cool thing to do.
Yeah.
They want to go. And then they'll line up buying tickets for it.
No, I'm excited about that, though, because I think the Pacific Northwest, they do deserve a date. NASCAR's been wanting to get out there for a long, long time. And if you can't have a street course race in Seattle or Portland or wherever, I think this is a great opportunity to see, A, what the fan base is like, and B, if the venue itself is sustainable for potentially a cup race.
Yeah, for sure. It's a market that's long overdue for trying out again. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm happy to see something new.
Checkered flag, here I come. Oh no!
Checkered flag is out on the podcast this week. Massey, as you know, we do our do's and our don'ts, our moos and our moats. I'll run through them real quick one time. My do for this week is to keep an eye on silly season. I know that things are heating up a little bit. Daniel Hemric this past week going to Colic Racing. We have an announcement coming up with GMS Racing in terms of one of their truck drivers for next season on a full-time basis. And there's also going to be a lot more moving and shaking when it comes to the Xfinity and the truck series. So keep an eye on silly season. A lot more left to be heard on that side of things. And my don't is actually goes against what we're about to do, but is to bet on this weekend. Don't bet on it. Like, don't place any matchups. Don't place any one-on-one bets to win a race because Talladega is so damn unpredictable. So even though Denny Hamlin is probably a good bet to finish inside the top five, he's a good bet, but he's a bad bet considering what else happens at Talladega. I tend to stay away from super speedway races because it is so unpredictable. And even if Denny Hamlin leads every single lap, he could get taken out on the last one, and you could lose your matchup, lose your bet. So if you can do it, stay away from the bets this weekend. Save it for next weekend. Save it for the Roval. What are your do's and your don'ts, your moves and your moats, Mr. Massey?
Yeah, you always tell people to gamble responsibly, and gambling on Talladega is gambling irresponsibly.
That is correct.
There you go. But if you were to bet, I would say watch out for Jeb Burton in the Xfinity race this weekend, because he's been a huge hole, and this is his chance, right? This is his season, whether or not he wins this race.
And we know Kyle is good on super speedways.
Exactly. We saw their move at Daytona where they just went three wide.
And who won the last race at Talladega?
Jeb Burton. So, yep, he could back it up there. My don't would be to expect too crazy of a winner. I think sometimes we start thinking, I know we're contradicting stuff we said earlier.
Yeah, but what happened to Justin Allgaier?
Well, that's not that crazy. I'm saying, like, don't expect a Quinn Hall to win it. Okay, I wouldn't expect obvious Alfredo or a Rick Ware car to win it. No disrespect to them, but
Joey Gase from the hospital to victory lane.
That would be a story, man. That would be a story.
I'd be here for it.
Yeah, but I think you're going to see the Fords up front, the usual contenders for most of the way. It's just what happens at the end is where we might get the surprise winner. What the big wreck of the end, or what, you know, whatever happens.
Yeah. Well, Massey, as you said, every week we tell you to gamble responsibly, and these odds are courtesy of Caesars Sportsbook in association with William Hill. You know the deal, party people. Head-to-head, driver matchups, one-on-one, whoever will finish higher, but don't do it, because that was my don't for the week. Massey, are you ready?
I am so ready.
Denny Hamlin versus Joey Logano.
Denny.
Agreed. Kurt Busch versus Tyler Reddick.
Kurt Busch.
I'll go Reddick. He's on a roll. Keselowski versus Larson.
Keselowski. It's his track.
Yeah, it is. It's his playground. Ross Chastain versus Michael McDowell.
McDowell. He's had top threes in two of the super speedways this year.
Agreed. And Ross's aggressiveness could work against him at a place like Talladega. How about Eric Almirola versus Bubba Wallace?
Let's go Bubba with Denny pushing him from behind.
Yeah, Bubba's my pick to win every super speedway until he actually wins a super speedway race. I think I've picked him in every one since the 500. So I got to roll with Bubba. How about Kevin Harvick versus Kyle Busch?
Harvick, he was right there at the end of Daytona.
Yep, he was. He was right there at Daytona. Both historically not great on super speedways, but I'll lean the Ford car as well. William Byron versus Alex Bowman, two drivers that need a good run.
Yeah, I'd say Byron. He's a better super speedway racer.
Agreed. He's the favorite for that reason. Matty D versus Austin Dillon.
Matty D. He should have won in the spring. He should have won fall last year.
That's right. Fall last year was a heartbreaker for him too. I'll just be different and go Austin Dillon, because he's obviously had his fair share of success on super speedways. How about the two friends, Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney?
Blaney. He's the super speedway master now.
I agree. Penske's really good. And last but not least, Joe Gibbs Racing teammates who do not like super speedway racing. Martin Truex Jr. versus Christopher Bell.
I'll go Truex.
I'll go Bell. Truex really does not like super speedways for whatever reason. All right. I was going to call you Lambert because I opened up the wrong thing on my Google Doc. All right, Massey.
Thank you for Denny Hamlin this week.
Yeah, good luck with that. It was actually like really like not trying to like plug my stuff again, but it was really insightful conversation because he was taking me through and taking us through like the thought process of what he needs to tell Denny at certain times and how Denny processes it and how they position themselves at the end of plate races, not plate, super speedway races, to know that even if there's an open lane in a certain spot, they don't want to fill it because then they'll get stuck. And the thing is, they always want to stay up top. I'm not giving away secrets here. He said it. They want to stay in the top lane because if they let somebody get to their right rear, they're done for. If they can get to somebody else's right rear, then they can control the air and they can get a run heading through the tri-oval. It was really insightful stuff.
Yeah. Go give that a listen if you want to, folks.
Yes, absolutely. That's why I pay Massey the big bucks here. Thank you, Massey, though, for the time. It's always fun to chat with you and keep that playoff beard going. It's not a playoff beard, though, is it? It's just a beard.
Yeah, it's kind of a midsummer since then beard. So
keep it going, though. I feel like you have to now through Phoenix.
Yeah, for sure. I think so.
Okay, good. Well, thank you guys for listening to the pod as well. If you like what you heard here today, please leave us a rating and a review. Subscribe to the podcast. We're available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. We should be available there for your consumption. And if we're not, drop us a line and we'll try to rectify that issue for you. Until next week, when we have on another guest from the NASCAR world, recap Talladega and preview the Roval. For Michael Massey, bearded man, I am Davey Siegel. We will catch you on the flip side. Be good, party people.